Hello everyone, my name is Jill McCanney. I'm one of the trainer advisors in Middletown Centre for Autism and also one of the specialist occupational therapists in the centre. As part of Middletown Centre's series of podcasts, I'm delivering this podcast on the topic of promoting engagement in personal care activities. This is a follow-on from a live webinar that I gave on the same topic a number of weeks ago. And what I'll be doing in this short podcast is really providing an overview of the main themes and strategies that I discussed during the webinar. So first of all, thinking about what do I mean by the term personal care activities, because obviously it's a very broad term that can mean different things to different people. But what I'm focusing on in this podcast is the kind of self-care activity that we engage in a weekly, monthly, even a daily basis. And it may encompass small, short tasks such as washing our hands or brushing our teeth, thinking then about longer activities such as taking a bath or washing our hair, and then the much more complex activities that actually involve leaving the house, like visiting the dentist or going to the hairdressers to getting our hair cut. So this term personal care activity can really encompass that whole spectrum of self-care tasks. And what we know is that many individuals with autism find these personal care activities very challenging. We want to think about some of the factors that create such a challenge for many autistic individuals. And one of the main components of self-care activities that can create this challenge is the sensory input involved. So research tells us that around 85 to 90% of people with autism process sensory input in a different way from what we would ordinarily expect. And people with autism themselves will tell us that they experience sensory input in a very different way. And one of the patterns that we often see in our autistic children and young people is a hypersensitivity or a hyperreactivity to sensory input. And the cluster that we often see is tactile and auditory sensitivity. Those two particular sensitivities would tend to occur with a very high frequency in children and young people with autism. And it's pretty much impossible to avoid tactile input and personal care activities because all self-care tasks involve an element of tactile input. Any time that water hits our skin, that's tactile input. So showering, washing our hair, washing our hands, all of that involves touch input. Applying deodorant, putting on shaving foam, any of those activities are going to involve tactile input. And then thinking about a child who's getting their nails cut or their hair cut, there's a huge amount of tactile input involved there. And if you are somebody who has a tactile sensitivity, who is tactile hyperreactive, then that kind of tactile input is being processed at a much greater intensity. And that can then elicit a very strong fear or adverse response to that tactile input, which can then lead to refusal to engage in personal care activities. Auditory input maybe is less frequent component of personal care activities, but we do see it in some tasks. So if we think about the noise of a hairdryer or even all the different noises when you go into hairdressers or barbers, like the noise of nail clippers and people talking and so on, any kind of noise input like that is again going to generate a very negative response in personal care tasks. And then of course, many of these self-care activities also have a strong element of smell involved, because of course shower gels, shampoos, deodorants are very highly scented. And if you're somebody who has a very strong hypersensitivity to smell, then again, you're going to have a very negative response to shampoos and soaps and shower gels. And that's then going to possibly elicit actually quite a negative physiological response, like gagging or feeling nauseous or having a headache. And if a child or young person experiences those kind of responses during a personal care activity, then they're going to make a negative association and they're going to refuse to engage in that task. And of course, this is what happens then whenever the child or the young person first engages in a self-care task, thinking right back to the early years of brushing their teeth or getting their nails cut for the first time. If they had a very unpleasant experience and possibly actually a painful experience, if the sensory input was being interpreted and processed as pain, then they're going to tag a negative memory to that activity. And so the next time that they're asked to engage in that activity, we then trigger a fear response in that child or that young person. And of course, then as a protective mechanism, they refuse to engage in the activity because they don't want to have that negative experience again. So that's going to feed into the refusal to engage in personal activities also. Another component of personal care tasks that ties in with the sensory processing is the unpredictability of the input. And again, this is going to be particularly relevant for our younger child who tends to have the personal care activities done to them. So a parent or a carer cuts their nails for them or washes their hair for them. And that then means that the sensory input is unpredictable because if somebody else is washing their hair, they don't know where their head is going to be touched next, what part of their head, when it's going to be touched. They don't know how many jugs of water are going to be poured over their hair. So that brings in this unpredictable element and a feeling of having no control over the sensory input. And you can imagine then the amount of fear and panic that that then generates. And again, then that will feed into reluctance to engage in personal care activities. And then a final component, which isn't sensory based, but that may explain some of the lack of engagement in personal care activities, is that the task may simply just not make sense to the child or young person. We know that the thinking style that's very typically associated with autism is concrete thinking, and yet the purpose of some personal care tasks may seem quite abstract to that child or young person. It may not be obvious to them why they have to engage. So we might say to a child, go and wash your hands, and they say, well, why do I have to wash my hands? We say, well, your hands are dirty, or you've got germs in your hands, so you need to wash them. And they look down at their hands and they don't see dirt and they don't see germs. So why should they wash their hands? Or similarly, a teenager who we're starting now to expect to shower more regularly, because as they hit puberty and adolescence, it becomes imperative that they take more care of personal hygiene. So we're trying to encourage them to shower on a daily basis, but they just don't see the point because they don't see any dirt in their skin. They don't notice their own body odor. So why should they shower every day? So we need to be very clear in the purpose of the task, and that alone can sometimes be enough to promote engagement. And we'll talk about that a little bit more at the end. So what can we do to encourage engagement in personal care activities? One of the first things that we need to ensure is that the child or young person is in a calm and regulated state. Because remember, I said that they will have attached a negative memory to many of these personal care activities because of the unpleasant past experience. So as soon as we say the trigger word of bath or shower or getting their nails cut or getting their hair cut, we immediately elicit that panic response. And the child or young person is going to then refuse to engage because they feel so anxious. So we need to acknowledge that anxiety and ensure then that we give access to some calming strategies before we expect engagement in the personal care activity. Now, obviously, the calming strategy is going to be very individual to your child or to the child or young person that you're working with. But just think about what is effective in calming them and use that strategy then before a personal care activity, whether it's breathing exercises, progressive muscle relaxation, listening to calming music, squeezing a stress ball, whatever it is that gets them into that calm and regulated state, offer that to them before the personal care activity. And then where possible, continue that on during the personal care activity. You want to keep them calm and regulated during the task. So let them continue listening to calming music if that's what works for them. Or if it's possible within the activity, let them continue squeezing a stress ball or doing progressive muscle relaxation or maybe doing some stretches with TheraBand. Whatever it is, again, that makes them feel calm and more able to cope during the personal care activity. We often find that providing some kind of deep pressure input, like kind of weighted item during the activity, can be really effective in helping to keep them calm. So having a little weighted lap pad across their lap while they're getting their nails cut or while they're getting their hair cut can be a really effective way of keeping them in a regulated state for the duration of the activity. So once we know that they're in the calm and regulated state, then we can introduce the personal care task. And one of the key strategies that we use when trying to engage somebody who is very fearful or who is totally refusing to engage in activities is using a desensitization approach, sometimes referred to as graded exposure. And really, all all that we mean by that is that we're going to gradually increase the duration that we expect them to engage in the task. It's not going to be realistic to expect a child who completely refuses to brush their teeth to suddenly start brushing their teeth for 2 minutes. So what we're going to do is we're going to build that very gradually. So we're going to start by expecting them to brush their teeth for 10 seconds. We'll do that for maybe every morning and evening for a week. Then we'll build it up to 20 seconds for a week, then 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and so on until we get to the recommended 2 minutes. In order to show that time, because remember that our children, young people with autism, want to visually see how long the task is going to last, because time is quite an abstract concept. And whenever they're feeling very stressed, you saying to them, but I only want you to brush your teeth for 20 seconds, that may not be meaningful for them, whereas a visual timer is going to be meaningful. So use something like a sand timer or a digital timer to show them how long they have to brush their teeth for. And then, as I say, we'll gradually increase that. Or we may not use a visual timer at all. What may be more effective for some of our children and young people is to show duration or make duration very concrete by using music. So if you have a young child who likes the song Old MacDonald Had a Farm, you'll maybe sing one verse every morning and evening while they brush their teeth for a week. Then week two, you'll sing two verses of Old MacDonald Had a Farm, and then three verses. So you'll increase the duration of the song while they brush their teeth, so that they're brushing their teeth for longer and longer time. Or for an older child, if they have a favourite pop song that they like, you might play that pop song while they brush their teeth, just for 10 seconds at first, then 20 seconds, 30 seconds, building up towards that 2 minutes. So there are different ways of increasing the duration of the task, but doing it in a very graded manner. And I took the example there of teeth brushing, but you can apply that to any activities, whether it's, you know, nail brushing, washing hands, whatever the activity may be. Increase the time spent on the task. Another way of doing desensitization is to increase the number of steps that are involved in the activity. So if we take the example this time of nail cutting, we, rather than expecting the child to tolerate having all 10 fingernails cut in one session, we're going to reduce the number of nails that we're going to cut in one session, because as any parent or carer knows who has a child who hates getting their nails cut, 10 is an ambitious target for one session. So let's take it right back and say to the child or young person, or ideally show them on a visual support, I'm going to cut one nail and then it's all done. And then every evening for 10 days, you're just going to cut one fingernail. And then every evening, maybe for 10 days or every morning, whatever time of day suits, you're going to cut one toenail. And that takes you through 20 days, and then it'll be ready to start again. Over time, then what we're allowing them to do is get more used to getting their nails cut. But we'll increase that over time. So once they're more tolerant, you might then be able to cut two nails in each session, then three nails, four nails. So gradually you're able to cut more nails in a session and do it less frequently until they're able to tolerate getting all 10 fingernails cut in one session. But it may take them a while to get there. The key with desensitization is to go at the child's pace and watch for their responses and be very respectful of those responses. And from that, then you can gauge what they're going to be able to realistically tolerate. And then when you feel that they can tolerate more, that's when you can take it on a step. So that would be a couple of examples of desensitization there with the teeth brushing and the nail cutting. Another example may be going to the hairdressers, which is a much more complex activity, but the same principles apply. Take it in very slow, gradual steps. So you might start by just walking past the hairdressers every day for a week and just mentioning to your child's walk past, oh, there's the hairdressers, people are getting their hair cut. After doing that a few times, you might then take your child into the waiting area, just let them stand in the waiting area and then leave. You may then prolong the time that they spend in the waiting area. And then eventually you want to get to the stage where you can ask them to sit in the hairdresser's chair, but without getting their hair cut. Just get a feeling for what the chair feels like. Get used to seeing the scissors or the nail clippers and so on in front of them. And once your child is feeling more comfortable going to the hairdresser's and sitting in that chair, then you're going to introduce actual hair cutting and explaining to your child, okay, today we will try and get your hair cut. May only be for 10 seconds. It may only be a couple of snips of the hair and then it's all done. But that's going to be the first step. And then over the course maybe of a few days, they're going to spend longer and longer in the hairdressers. Now, obviously, I'm sure some of you are thinking as you're listening to this, well, you know, are all hairdressers going to be tolerant of that? You have to find a hairdresser who understands the challenges that your child's having, and other parents and other carers will be able to advise on this. They'll know hairdressers in the local community that are very sympathetic towards autistic children and young people that are fearful of having their hair cut. And then you can go and visit them and chat to them and say, you know, we're going to call in, we're not going to get our hair cut. And then after a few weeks, maybe my child can sit in the chair and you talk through the plan with the hairdresser and agree what you're going to do. And making the hairdresser very aware that if the haircut needs to stop, if your child's getting too distressed, that you stop the haircut and you come back another day. Other strategies as well, just to bear in mind, just going to the hairdressers, you know, think of time of day. Ask the hairdresser, can you go before opening times or have the very last appointment of the day when it's going to be much quieter? Strategies like that are going to be helpful. And remembering your calming strategies as well, like letting your child squeeze a stress ball or having that weighted lap pad across their knees may just help them tolerate that haircut. So again, another example, that's going to be a much longer term desensitization program. It is a little bit more complex, but it can be very effective. And as I say, it goes back to those basic principles of just taking it very gradual and building up to a much longer stay than at the hairdressers. And then the final example of desensitization is maybe moving a child who is only getting washed at the wash hand basin, moving them towards the shower or the bath. And the way we would do that would be we would let them wash at the wash hand basin, and we may then have a basin of water that is beside the wash hand basin, and we get them then eventually to wash from that basin. So they use a face cloth or a sponge and they wash from that little standalone basin. And over time, each day, you're going to move that basin closer to the bath or the shower until eventually you put the basin into the bath or the shower. So your child is now washing in the bath or in the shower, but still from that basin. And then once they're comfortable with being in the bath or the shower, you may then, in the case of the bath, be able to just fill the bath with a little bit of water. And over time, increase then the amount of water in the bath. Or with the shower, it may go back to that duration of time where you just turn the shower on for 5 seconds and then it's all done. And then the next time it's 10 seconds and building it up from there. And try and keep familiar, predictable materials whenever you're doing that transition from the wash hand basin to the bath or the shower. Use the favorite face cloth or the sponge. Use the shower gel or the soap that they're familiar with. Don't change any other component of the task. Keep those familiar, predictable items, and that will make it easier for the child or young person to then tolerate the change to the bath or the shower. So another example there of desensitization. But that then brings me into another point of be flexible and think a little bit, you know, outside the box. Always think about what is the end goal of a task, and is it absolutely essential that it is done in the traditional or the typical way? And quite often that's not essential. So if we take that example of washing at the wash hand basin, if that is what a child is comfortable doing, if they are comfortable washing at the wash hand basin, maybe we don't need to change that at all, because the end goal of the task is to get clean and to smell good. And if that is done as easily at the wash hand basin as it is in the shower or the bath, then that's fine. We maybe don't need to expect them to have a bath or a shower at all. So thinking about what works for the child and maybe accepting that that is going to be the long-term strategy for them. Also think about what things can you replace or change to make the activity more accessible. So common sense really here, if your child or if a young person you're working with doesn't like strong smelling shower gels or shampoos, get ones that don't have any scent, and there's plenty available on the market. There's also products available, particularly deodorant, that have a more natural scent rather than the very strongly perfumed deodorants and shower gels. So go for something more natural or more neutral. Find something, take the child or the young person to the local supermarket or to the local pharmacy and get them to smell the different shampoos or gels until they find one that they like, and then use that one. You can also get toothpaste that doesn't have any flavor to it, or you can get toothpaste with different flavors. Instead of mint, you might get strawberry flavored ones. So again, think about alternative. If your child doesn't like having the shower over their head to get the water rinsed or to get the shampoo rinsed out of their hair, then think about using a jug. Or maybe you're going to squeeze water from a face cloth over their head if they find that more tolerable. So thinking about alternatives, try those with your child or young person, get them to explore them, and then settle on those alternatives. And that can then make these activities a very simple solution, but that can make these activities much more accessible and much easier to tolerate. And then another component that I mentioned at the start of this podcast that can be very challenging in personal care activities is the unpredictability of the sensory input and the feeling that they have no control if the personal care activity is being done to them. So if somebody is washing their hair or cutting their nails, they have no control over that activity. So what I would suggest is give them the control as soon as you can. Promote independence in personal care activities at a young age. As soon as the child is able at all to engage in the activity and to take on the skills themselves, encourage that. Even very young children will be very capable of rubbing shampoo into their own hair and of pouring a jug of water over their own head. Maybe the child will have to be a little bit older before they can cut their own nails, but let them try. If they can safely do so, let them try to cut their own nails, because not only then are you promoting independence, which is always our end goal with our children and young people, but we're giving them a sense of control in the activity, and they are now receiving predictable input because they are doing the input to themselves, and that instantly makes that input predictable. So that can be a really powerful way of promoting engagement in these personal care activities. And then the final thing that I would like to mention is, again, going back to the notion that I mentioned at the beginning of the very concrete thinking that we see in many of our children and young people with autism, that they just don't see the purpose of the task. So make sure you are very clear about the purpose or the end goal of the task. So I gave the example earlier of children or young people who don't see the need to wash because they don't see any dirt on themselves, or they don't see the need to get their hair cut. They're perfectly happy with their hair the way it is. Why on earth would they need to get their hair cut? So a very good way of clarifying the purpose of the task is through the use of one of Carol Gray's social stories, taking her model of social stories and applying that then to these personal care activities. So write a social story. We write them in the first person. So as if your child or the young person you're working with was talking, write a social story explaining why it's important to wash our hands, that it prevents germs from getting into our mouths and from making us sick might be the reason that we'll give for that. I know of parents who have written a social story about the reason that we get our hair cut is so that our hair doesn't get in our eyes and prevent us from seeing where we're going. So giving a very concrete reason for engaging in that personal care activities, and social stories are a good way of doing that. Another way of encouraging engagement in those very concrete thinkers is also just breaking the task down into sequential steps and providing visual support. So you'll know from our other live webinars and from all the resources on the Centre's website that we very much promote the use of visual structure and the use of visual support. And they themselves can promote engagement because it shows the child what is expected in the task, clarifies the end goal of the activity and what they're working towards. And they can follow that visual set of sequential steps. They see what is expected, and that in itself helps to promote engagement in these self-care tasks. So just revise all those strategies. We want to, first of all, make sure that the child or young person is in that calm and regulated state before we commence any personal care activity. We will then likely use a desensitization approach because most of our children and young people who are refusing to engage have developed that very negative association with these tasks. We need to go right back to the beginning and reintroduce these tasks through a graded exposure or desensitization approach and building up very gradually then towards the full task. And then thinking about promoting control and independence, which then creates predictable input. And then finally, making sure that we show very visually the end goal and the purpose of engagement in these personal care activities. So I hope that this short podcast has given some food for thought and hopefully given some strategies that will help support children and young people in engaging in these personal care activities. Obviously, I used a few examples there, but the strategies, remember, can be applied across the full range of personal care activities. You will find more resources to support these kind of tasks, both on the centre's online resource on life skills, and also there are specific personal care resources on the COVID-19 section of Middletown Centre's website. So thank you for listening to this podcast. This centre will continue this series of podcasts. They will be available both through Spotify and through the centre's website and will be released on a weekly basis every Friday. Thank you again for joining me. Goodbye.